And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
No fear, no fear, no fear here on Declare Your Independence, Lancaster, New Hampshire, at Somalia Fest, eking into Pork Fest tomorrow. You know, this is, it's been interesting to seeing a bunch of new friends again. We spent like a couple days just getting ready. I mean, it's a thing, you know, and now we're going to start making sure that we got the vending open and everybody's wanting to buy shirts. And all that. Davi, where are you, Davi? Get down here. People won't give you money, man. You don't want the money? I'll take money. It's all mine. You keep count of stuff? What if I just sell it and they'll tell you about it? How about that? Huh? Well, Davi be down here a little bit, and everybody's lined up. They want to get T-shirts and bumper stickers and goodies. That's good. So what we're going to go ahead and do is introduce you to Jack. He's with Alt Expo. It's been for like 10 years. You know, it's always been the alternative because he's advocating anarchy. He's advocating, you know, leave me aloneism, but it goes back to 1969. Oh, Nevada, be quiet, baby. So we have a opportunity to learn something about the history and the beginning of the movement, and then its modern-day application from Daryl Perry. Daryl Perry ran for the nomination of President of the United States of America on the Libertarian Party ticket, did a great job in Orlando this last spring, and I'll tell you, you know, this is kind of right here, we're going to have the old with the new, and there's a continuity here. So say hello, Daryl.
Hello, Daryl.
All right, wait, turn this off. I'll go ahead and say it.
Hello, Daryl.
Hello. And Jack, say hello.
Good morning.
Okay, now this is what we're going to go ahead and do. It starts back, you know, Jack's been involved in the movement since 69 in college. He was at Libertarian Party in Texas from 73 to 74, you know, Pennsylvania, 74, 75, you know, and agorist since 75 on, you know, defining what an agorist is. Now, I have the 25th anniversary edition here of the New Libertarian Manifesto by Samuel Edward Konkin the third. Now, in this particular book, the manifesto is about halfway through, and then the back of it, there are libertarian classics, you know, critiques by Murray Rothbard, Robert Lefebvre, and Erwin Strauss. So this, a lot of the things that you think are new discussions that we haven't talked about that before, it has been the same arguments for freaking ever. I've been doing, there was a book that's like required reading, two books. One, Atlas Shrugged. You know, do that in early 90s.
I'm convinced nobody's ever actually read that book.
Oh, I plowed, man. God. I mean, I know some people that read it on a regular basis, like every few years, because, okay, this is the thing. There's two books. That, and it usually begins with Ayn Rand. Usually begins with Ayn Rand. It's kind of a history of, you know, the Randian movement and Ayn Rand objectivism and libertarians and, you know, Murray Rothbard versus Rand and you're back and forth. Now it's quit it. The same argument's going on now has been going on since for freaking ever. But the Atlas Shrugged, in my opinion, when I first read it in 93, I think it was, when I read it, I could see what was happening. When she wrote it in the 50s, it was probably about a third already true, and some of it was speculation. By the time I got to it, there was only probably about 100 pages of 700-whatever-page book. I mean, it's an enormous book.
1,039 pages.
Oh, is it really? Yeah, I mean, it's a huge book.
I got to page 35, realized nothing was happening.
No, I'll tell you. Shut up, let me finish, and then you'll understand. So at the end of the book, it got to where it was probably like 100 pages left. I mean, that, you know, had yet to be speculation, because she predicted what was going to happen based on a philosophical what happened in the Soviet Union. As she came to America, you have the same problems. You're going to go through the same cycle. This is what's going to happen. Well, it happened. I mean, everything you would be decades away happening in the 50s, all of a sudden in the late 70s, in the 80s, in the 90s, it was like reading the news. And I'm going, wow. So that's why a lot of people will read it on a regular basis every couple of years. And it is entertaining if you're into that thing, except Galt's speech, which is like 80 pages. Oh, my God. But I get a bulldozer through that. But I could see now that we're down to the last, God, like the last four or five pages. I mean, this has been predictive. When they did the movie Atlas Shrugged, I was really impressed with the first one. I was shocked they did as well. The second and third one, not so much. You know, it was kind of a vanity thing, you know. But the first Atlas Shrugged movie, I thought they did really well, and I can see it being redone. You know, there's going to be, but there's not people, the actors that did it, they were like banned from polite society in Hollywood. You know, you're not, oh, hell no. Anybody does Atlas Shrugged, you don't work anymore kind of thing, you know. And so this history has been interesting. I'm 56. I graduated high school in 79, born in 61. So when I'm going to college in 80, then by that time, you had already been in college, like, you know, 15 years earlier, Jack. You're 69, and these ideas were just getting going. It wasn't until the early 72, 73, around in there, before the Libertarian Party got going. And these same arguments that we're having now were back then. Why did you choose to do the Alt Expo? What was that about when you came to these events and you were alternative what to what?
Good question. I just wanted to comment on one thing you say. A lot of these arguments have been had before. So I was helping a new mover here one time unload her truck, and I had said something, and she started arguing with me, and I said, you know, I got to tell you, I've had this argument like 29 times by 1974, so we've evolved beyond like libertarianism 101. The Alt Expo came along as kind of an extension of the study of agorism and how to apply it. What do we need to be doing? Konkin talks about, in the book, he talks about a strategy. And so there's a fellow here that talks about how a lot of the people in the movement kind of commit random acts of libertarianism. So they'll do just anything or they'll fight anything. And I kind of blamed Ian for that for a while. His strategy seemed to be fight everything, whatever was in front of you. But that's not a strategy. That's the opposite of a strategy. So strategy is where you want to figure out how to best put your energies, how to best put your efforts. The Konkin actually created a whole vocabulary that a lot of people use some of that vocabulary now, like minarchism. He created that term. He was trying to describe, basically, he says if libertarianism is a good philosophy, if it's something that'll work, it has to be a theory that you can practice. So in order to get to a libertarian or a free future, he says you've got to stay consistent. So he bashed the party, and he talks about this in the book. There's some great history in the book. And by the way, you can get it online. It's on several different sites. There's a PDF. Mike Gogolsky did an audio book of it. So it's the New Libertarian Manifesto. He talks about, he calls party activism a get liberty quick scheme, because people that get involved in the party think they're actually going to get somebody elected and actually, you know, create a free society by, sorry, Daryl. And he mentions how the first Libertarian Party was founded in 1970 by some people who were totally against Libertarian Party activism, but they were doing it just to get some media attention. And they kind of withered away. And late in 71, Susan Nolan created the existing Libertarian Party. And they also, David Nolan states this, he says, yeah, we were just doing it so we'd have an access to media. And
it's an educational thing.
Yeah.
Which is, it's a culture thing. And then, but it's a political party. And I've been involved from the beginning of my involvement for, God, you know, mid-90s, early 90s. That it was always about, got to get elected, raise more money to have staff to get elected, and we promise to get elected, and this time's the elected time. And I'm going, you know, it's just, you know, at least Daryl, when he was running, he's like, not so much, man. We're going to go out and be libertarian anarchists. And he had strong, I don't know, 20, 30% support of people kind of leaning your way in Orlando, and they're going, yeah, Bill Weld won by 50 point whatever, you know.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest.
Lancaster, New Hampshire, Samoa Fest, Pork Fest. We're here having a good time, rock and roll and whatnot. You know, the dome is up for partying. Tonight we'll have like several, you know, variations of party, and it's just going to range across the campground because it can. That's just the way it is here on Declare Your Independence. Free Talk Live is broadcasting from here also over the weekend and so on. So we're, and we just got our audio all set. It was the encoder thing got changed on the push button, just button. There's always these just buttons. Yeah, you just. Yeah, well, just come push that button for me. So they, you know, they put, yeah, Ian.
And
you know,
he did.
He come found the just button. They go, oh, I'll get down. I got to walk the dog. And kind of, you know, it's kind of, I'm on vacation, man. You know, so, all right, so we're good. We got it going on. All right, Jack is in, and the point that I wanted to make, you know, while we're testing the stuff here, I saw it was a good opportunity to have Jack come in. It has some history from the beginning, you know, like 40, 50 years, man. I mean, damn. So, you know, you get from the beginning of the movement, and I'm saying it's the same arguments. I've heard it. They go, yeah, well, this and how and kind of, you know, and a lot of these younger kids will come up, they're just regurgitating something that, you know, they heard or what was said before, and they go, God, I've heard this. It's gone in revolutions. It cycles over and over and over. About every three or four election cycles, you start hearing the same thing. It's like somebody keeps regurgitating this as a distraction or something. There's no progression. And that's why I'm so supportive of, you know, the pirate thing. It's just, yeah, it's all very interesting. It's an individual thing. Do what you want. Yeah, but what if it doesn't comport? Well, if this guy, he wants, he's doing across the country on his own by himself, and it's not the same thing that I want. I'm going, who cares? I mean, that's not, you know, the technology allows us for being able to do what we want. You don't like it, don't do it. You know, go write your own pirate code for your own ship, you know? So the thing is that there is a progression that has happened in the movement. I wanted Jack to kind of reiterate real quick, and I want to get to Daryl and where he picked up on it and how a lot of the old guard from back in the day, you know, what they thought of your campaign and if they made any kind of comparisons. You know, all of a sudden they go, yeah, you're just a better looking Rothbard. I don't know, you know, I don't know. We'll see what happens. So Jack, you know, skip to the end, man. Give me the gist of what you think the primary argument has been and where we're at now in it.
Okay, so the belief that I got this from Konkin. Konkin got it from Rothbard and other people, and the idea is that I think the people that get involved in the Libertarian Party believe that they can actually change the state, control it, that they can repeal things and they can make it better. But the real gut libertarian, or the core libertarian belief that came down in the early days, 69-ish, was that the state arose from conquest. It didn't arise from the people wanting it. So the conquerors, the statists, they actually control the whole system. They control the parties. You know, you can see that if you look at the Ron Paul campaigns, his own party would sabotage him. So it's like there's some string pullers at the top. You know, we don't have to get into what specific theory or anything. So libertarian theory is really, how do we get out from under this thing? How do we not get in there and adjust it? And essentially, you have to do so many compromises, and you end up getting used by the parties if you ever get in, and then you're obligated to them. So the Konkin theory, the new libertarian theory, the agorist theory, is that if you get involved in the state, if you try to become part of it to make it better, you're setting the libertarian movement back. And so it's actually an anti-libertarian act. And this is unpopular to say because so many people get involved in the party because they think thing, and because it has the name.
Well, as a goal for what? I mean, you know, Arizona, we've always been, you know, like, you're still voting. I mean, it wasn't a voting thing. It was, I get to stand on this soapbox and do interviews and get the debate and kind of slap them around and say you're still voting. I mean, does that enter into it? Is that, or you still think that's even, that's legitimizing the system too much?
Yeah, it is. Konkin points it out. He even quotes Ayn Rand kind of to zinger her. He says, the only reason the state has its power is because of the consent of the victim or the sanction of the victim. So voting is a move of granting sanction to the state. It's saying, I agree to abide by the outcome, you know, kind of in a common law way. You know, you say, I want this system. I want this system to rule me, but I just want to tweak it a little bit.
Yeah, see, that's the problem that I've seen in the past. There's a, you can't complain if you don't vote. And I'm going, you know, hell, that's the only time I get to complain.
Yeah,
if I don't vote, I can complain all I want. If I voted and it didn't turn out the way I want, I'm just a sore loser. I would have been happy if it went my way. You know, all of a sudden it didn't go my way, so I'm going to bitch. And I'm going, no, you sanctioned the system, man. You know,
exactly.
But I've been very clear. I mean, I'm not against political activism as far as an educator. I think it's been very effective. I mean, you know, the Ron Paul Revolution opened up a lot of things, but, you know, did it, in your opinion, set things back by them seeing more legitimacy of it, or did it expose the illegitimacy of the system?
Well, see, I didn't criticize the Ron Paul movement publicly because I knew it would bring a lot of people into the movement that would eventually get it philosophically. So, mm-hmm. You know, it may have been a net positive. But where I came in, I went into the laissez-faire bookstore on Mercer Street in New York City because I figured that'd be the happening center of action. And when I walked in, there was a...
Move over. All right, I'll turn it that way.
All right.
Stay on the freaking mic. Okay.
So in the back room, there was a debate going on between Sam Konkin and Gary Greenberg. And Gary Greenberg was a lawyer, and he was the chairman of the Free Libertarian Party of New York. So this was like a real pivotal argument, and I've got it on tape somewhere. I don't know if I can find it. Konkin was saying, yeah, you'll get publicity by running as a libertarian, but on the Libertarian Party ticket, and you'll be educating, but you'll be educating people to the wrong thing, and that is that they should join the state system. They should like the state enough to become involved in it. So he says, it's setting the libertarian movement back in that you're telling people that you should vote, you should become a part of it. And he's saying we need to create the economic means, the agora. Agora just means marketplace, you know, from the Greek. And he came up with that term because he felt it was the consistent application of libertarian principles, whereas voting and parliamentary-type action was the opposite of libertarianism. We want to be free of, you know, a democracy taking away our rights,
you know,
things like that.
It's technically, I get Daryl in on this because, you know, my whole thing in my advocacy of using this party, I mean, the pirate thing as a vehicle for this expression is that I am not seeing any alternative other than individuals being able to supply for themselves all of the features and benefits of society without the burden of the state. You know, I mean, it's like communication. Yeah, you can decentralize and uncensor and encrypt and whatever, and I need, I want, and I'm going to get, and it's called Craigslist and Tinder. I mean, you know, from loving to, you know, to whatever, you know, the biscuits. I mean, it's going to happen. Then you have the ability to, you know, power yourself, you know, to feed yourself, the power to, you know, educate yourself, to transport. I mean, this is happening to where the state is just becoming, I don't know.
Irrelevant.
Yeah. Obsolete.
Those are the alternatives.
You look in your rearview mirror and it's slipping over the horizon and you're going
exactly.
Flat and you just forget about them. So when we come back, you know, Daryl Perry.
There are those that just want to be left alone and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Yeah, it sounds like a libertarian band. They're having money. Hi, we're back here on Declare Your Independence here in Lancaster, New Hampshire. Somalia Fest and Pork Fest coming up here tomorrow. So we wanted to make sure that we, I wanted to get the perspective from, here, let me turn down one of these here. I got the right, the returns kind of said, knobs, man, knobs and buttons. The one thing that I wanted to make sure that we talked about is the translation from the early days of these arguments of whether to be involved politically or not, and what we're trying to advocate, and what's the best way of doing that. And a lot of times the state, of course, they'll, that's one of the things, the first letter of Captain Mark or the piratswithoutborders.com, and you can listen to Ben Stone reading the first letter of Mark. You just click on the play button, and it's awesome. And we played it on a big speaker here, and I was like, wow, I was blown away. That's the first time I heard it like that. It was awesome. And the main thing is like, look, we're not looking to be revolutionaries. We don't want to, like, take over or fix your system. Keep it. I don't care. You know, you just can't force us to live your way. And we don't expect you to live ours. We just leave me aloneist mentality. And I'm wondering, you know, when Daryl Perry advocated this as an anarchist candidate for president of the United States of America on the Libertarian ticket, it was very clear he stayed really hardcore to that. And I'm wondering, you know, the old guard, you know, the guys that have been around for a while, the advocates of what you were advocating. I saw in Orlando it was a good quarter or so percent of support for you and that. And they're like, we win! Bill Weld won! You know, got his, you know, 50 point whatever, and he got to be VP, and Gary John kind of, then he endorsed or, you know, bona fide, backed up, and I don't know if it was the endorsement. What was it? He
said very, very, very nice things about Hillary.
No,
lifelong friends.
He vouched. He vouched
for
her.
Yeah, I vouched for her.
He vouched for her. What a crock of crap. So anyway, this is,
while
they're claiming a win,
right.
You had the largest contingent of anarchist libertarians that expressed themselves at the convention than I've seen in 20-something years. And I don't think it was appreciated by a lot of people, but I'm old enough, been around long enough to go, it's growing inside, man, you know.
Right.
And National Chair Nick lives not too far from me in Phoenix and Glendale there. And I'm just like, I don't think you guys understand what you're up against. This isn't getting smaller.
Right.
And so tell me about your experience and the support you got.
Yeah, so I don't think I got as much support as I probably could have if I would have run a more traditional campaign. I was not accepting Federal Reserve notes. I had told the FEC, I'm not complying with your regulations. I'm not accepting your state money. I will only accept cryptocurrencies, gold, silver, things of that sort. And so that sort of put a lot of people off to where they're like, oh, Daryl's not serious. Well, no, I was serious about spreading the message of liberty. I was serious about trying to get the Libertarian Party to actually nominate a libertarian. And you were there. You know, there were the calls for compromise. Ah, we need Gary. You anarchists don't want to compromise. And people, all right, you don't want Daryl? How about John McAfee? No. We need somebody that's, you know, not that. Gary. Well, no. How about Mark Feldman? No, we need Gary. And so Gary winds up getting the presidential nomination and then comes for the VP vote. And it's like, let's have Will Coley. No. He's too radical. All right, well, let's have Larry Sharp. No, you damn anarchist. You don't want to compromise. Got to be Bill Weld or nothing. Well, how many times did we try to offer up different alternatives to be shot down and told we're not willing to compromise? No, I think we showed that, you know, we're willing to compromise to bring the party together, but there was that, you know, just a slight majority, ever so slight, 18 damn votes between having Bill Weld and having Larry Sharp as the VP nominee. So I think people showed we're willing to compromise. But that slight majority wanted to just ram things through and then say, you're not willing to compromise because you're not bending over backwards, sucking on the original porcupine, apparently.
This is a, this happens every convention. And but this was is really more on display at this because it was Memorial Weekend.
Yes.
And so there was a big crowd of people like, well, I know why you libertarians aren't winning. You don't have a flag up there that you guys are worshiping, support our troops and having a special kind of whatever. And we're going, wow, man, you guys did not, you know, you don't know what libertarianism is about. They were just there to make sure there are lots, hundreds, to get Bill Weld in and the Johnson right. Weld ticket.
Well, one of the guys that threw his hat in the ring last minute for the VP nomination had lost a Republican primary on Tuesday for, like, U.S. Senate, joined the party on, like, Thursday, announced he was running for vice president Saturday, and then after he wound up, I still think that he was a plant to make sure that the vote got split to where Weld got the nomination, because he waited until several states had turned in their votes to drop out of the VP race, and those states couldn't re-vote. I heard people say, I only voted for Weld because I didn't want to go to a third ballot because it was getting long in the day. So if he would have dropped out and it was a two-man race, I think people would have voted
for
Larry.
These are games that are... I'm wondering, the thing that I'm trying to get from you is that when you had people that have been around the party, like Jack and so on, you know, these kind of guys that have been around a long time, did they appreciate what you're trying to do? Are they trying to help?
I
are they
there
critical?
Were a lot of people that appreciated, but not necessarily people that were, you know, helping. There certainly were some people that... You know, helped allow me to be able to go to all the state conventions I went to, have a decent presence at National. But I also heard from some of the older people, they're like, oh, well, you know, you're just not as photogenic as
I got
else.
Sick. You didn't have the right kind of jacket, your haircut,
you don't have
or
a custom suit. You don't have a tailor.
No, that. I made fun of these guys. I'm going, seriously, that's your goal?
Yeah.
But the main thing that I got from a lot of
the
people
that were like, we need to be respectable, we have to be seen as respectable, those are the people that drive me nuts. I think we need more James Weeks naked dancing, not less.
You know, that was one thing. I looked at everybody was like, the only thing I was uncomfortable with is if he was going to use up his whole time. You know, I'm like, seriously, man, you made the point, you know. And but as far as I'm concerned, what happened is a gentleman that was running for national chair got up and started stripping to music.
Right.
And I'm like, cool. It's good advertisement for New Orleans in 18. Libertarian right. Party partays, man, from the state. So I see a meme coming.
Just a couple of things. I was not in the room when it happened because I had to go to the bathroom. I had no clue he was going to do it, but I had no less than a dozen people blame me for him doing what he did.
Of course they did.
Because he was
damn
one of
anarchist.
My volunteers.
Damn anarchist.
He was one of my volunteers, so therefore, you know, everything has to be centrally planned. Daryl had to have put him up to this.
Well, this is, you know, the anarchist wing of the Libertarian Party has always been there. It has, in my estimation, is on the upswing. It's growing.
Yes.
And there's so much to compare with of what has not worked. And the Johnson Weld thing in the era of Trump and Clinton, and then for Weld to come out and vouching for Clinton right at the end, this is, and anybody that had anything to do with that, to have any kind of credibility, is just them revisionist history. They're just making it up on their own, and their only metric is how much money they think they can raise.
Right.
And I'm going, just an opinion, a mood of the activist is worth more than you're ever going to raise, and it's not seen that way. So I'm more and more, I'll go to the parties and hang just so you find out where the real party is, the party.
Continue until morale improves.
Right? Yeah, it's going to change. It's happening quickly now as we watch it. And you come here to...
This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I specialize in helping you find the real estate that fits your needs. Whether you are looking to purchase a home or a piece of land, whether it's in town or a rural setting, I can help you find exactly what you are looking for. Most of us are aware of the turbulent times ahead and will need to settle in a place that will suit our particular desires, not only to protect our families, but to thrive in the coming downturn of the economy. Unfortunately, that time is not in the future, but it is upon us, and if you are going to get ahead of the game, now is the time to prepare. Qualifying options for new loans are narrowing, the dollar is being devalued every day, and living expenses are on the rise. So I have created a useful tool on my webpage at DonnaHancock.com that will allow you to search for properties at your leisure that are of interest to you. Simply click on the Search MLS tab at the top of my webpage to begin your search today. Start preparing for your future, and when you are ready to move forward with your home or land buying purchase, we can work together to get you and your family ready to flourish. Feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819. And let's get started today.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Lancaster. Lancaster, New Hampshire, up near the Canadian border in northern New Hampshire. Rogers Campground, having a rock and roll and good time. Yeah, I tell you, a lot of childhood memories is going on here. I've seen these kids grow up for a decade. They start off at 10, and all of a sudden they're 20 and got a kid. I mean, you know, it's interesting to see the progression here, and a lot of when they start off, the first thing that they do, the first days is they'll have little entrepreneur classes for the kids, and then after that, all of a sudden you get a wave of, you know, dozens of little kids going, walk your dog, clean your campsite, take out your trash, massage your feet, you know, I mean something, you know,
yep.
give me Bitcoin, give me money, you know, I might fork it over. And as these kids have done, you know, I bet they're gazillionaires now. I mean, if they kept all their Bitcoin they did for walking dogs back in the day,
yeah,
that's how Doug Smoothie got his name. You know, Doug Smoothie, he was out here in the sun selling smoothies from like a little ice cream cart. You know, when I remember, you know what you can get with your Bitcoin? You can get a smoothie, $6.
Yep.
$6 Bitcoin. The boy made, he goes, and thank you for playing. So he made bank on that. I wonder how much he still has.
So did Hendrick, the guy that used to run the kitchen out of the pavilion.
Oh, who?
George Mandrick.
Mandrick, yeah, Baklava. Yeah. You know, he went on to work for, like, blockchain.info
and
you know, a bunch of other stuff. And, if we knew back then, we just, you know, we're all povertarians, you know, as we always are. So I wanted to finish up with your perspective on what kind of impact you think your campaign had on the long term of this, because I think when you're in convention, as much as they would, I mean, the biggest thing I complain about is your haircut and how well your jacket fit.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just
when I get upset, I've got forehead veins that pop out. And
Oh my God.
I mean, getting so pissed off because, you know, like, I'm a radio guy, right? So I know when I'm told you've got 30 seconds to answer a question, I'm going to answer it in less than 30 seconds. There was a big giant timer that everybody could see on the stage.
And everybody ignored.
Everybody ignored, except for me. And then there was the one question about the drug war where I even said, I'm ignoring the time limit because everybody else has.
Time!
And, no, I blew through the time, but, like, I've had several people say that was, like, the highlight of the debate performance for them was when I just ignored the time.
And that where you, at the end, you yelled and kind of stood back a little bit.
Yeah.
You did something. Yeah, I remember that. I was very pleasantly surprised at the respect that you got, how well you did in the pre-debate and the debate. And it was well enough that everybody made, you had to have tokens in order to be able to be on the C-SPAN televised debate.
Yes.
And these tokens, how many did you have to have? 100 or 50 or 75?
Like 78.
78. It was a percentage of something.
They did this weird thing. Yeah, it was a percentage of the number of delegates that were there at a certain point.
Yeah, 10% or something
and
like that.
They were doing this weird thing to where they told the candidates that they're not allowed to collect the tokens themselves. You've got to tell people, put them in the box over at the secretary's desk. And the secretary would not give anybody running totals and said, the campaign should be organized enough to know how many they've got. Well, how am I supposed to know how many I've got when you told me that I'm not allowed to collect them?
Well, you know what was interesting is that everybody made, you know, like Mark Feldman?
Yes.
Right? You know, and he passed away. Matter of fact, you know, the sticker I got on my laptop says, yes, I'm that libertarian. That's where that came from.
Yes.
And we made those for Porkfest last year, and it was just announced that at Porkfest last year that he had died.
Yeah.
You know, and so we were really lucky to have those, and people wanted them. And to get him included, because he did such a good job and had fun during the pre-debate, the warm-up or something.
Right,
the qualifying debate. And so they wanted him included. Of course, everybody wanted you included. They wanted Will included. So it was, I was pleasantly surprised that everybody made sure that, you know, their favorite, you know, people, even though you may have been a second or third choice, that you made it up on the stage.
I was telling people, you know, once I find out that I have enough tokens, give them to Mark Feldman because he deserves to be in the debate.
Yeah. It was an awesome debate.
They popped numbers up on the screen where Johnson had the most. I was second. Peterson was like two behind me. And then McAfee and Feldman, needed a handful more to qualify. Peterson runs around and finds two more tokens for himself so that he finished second in the token count. I ran around and found tokens for Mark Feldman to make sure he got in the debate.
Just the way it works out. Well, I'm wondering afterwards, after you did your presentations and the debate and so on, what kind of, you know, backslap and support did you get then?
There were still the people that think that I need to be expelled from the party because I'm one of those anarchists, and anarchists don't belong in the Libertarian Party because we need to redefine libertarianism to be, you know, only fiscal conservative, social liberal. That means centrist. We are not centrist. We believe in libertarianism.
Whatever the freaking convention says you are is what you are. You know, I mean, people that, if you're going to play that system, you get what you get. I'm just glad that, you know, the anarchist wing got represented. I think you did a really good job.
Yeah. And it was I have noticed that there seems to be a lot of motivation. Radicals, and now there's the Audacious Caucus. They seem to really be getting motivated for 2018 to, hey, let's try to amend the bylaws to prevent somebody from joining the party 2 weeks before and then walking out as the VP or possibly even the presidential nominee.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. But Jack, you're still voting? My thing is, and the audience knows, I've run for national chair four times.
Right.
And it was just to try and keep the fires burning for things like your campaign.
Right.
You know, I mean, you were kind of a supporter back in the day in this, and it kind of motivated you to do this kind of stuff. So I'm like, one less thing I got to do. I don't have to do it anymore. Daryl's doing it, you know? And I was really pleasantly surprised. I went to the executive committee, the LNC meeting, the Monday right after the convention, their first one. I hung out there, you know, because I know to get the airline flight for Tuesday, because Monday's when they're going to screw you, you know.
Yeah.
And
I had actually had somebody ask me after everything on Sunday. They said, will you run for LNC at large?
I was there, and the count came in. You won.
Well, hold on.
And then you declined or something.
No, so what had happened is this person paid my $50 change fee for the flight, and the only flight I was able to get was early afternoon Monday. So after, you know, the convention's over and they said, you know, we'll announce the results at this meeting, I was like, I've got to get to the airport. Somebody takes me to the airport, and then I find out that only two people wound up getting a majority of the vote, and I said, well, if I wasn't duly elected, I don't want to be appointed. And then I found out, oh, I would have been appointed had I not withdrawn. All I knew is I was not elected.
So you were saying, see, the thing is that you have a majority, you have to have 50 plus
you
one
to have
in order
50%.
To be direct, and then they take the executive committee when you don't have enough people for that, they'll just appoint people. Well, you had
correct.
The highest, you know, vote percentage without you came in third or something like that. And, so they were going to, of course, you know, Daryl was going to be appointing, like, nah, I'm just, and plus it's expensive and you got to fly around and it's a pain in the ass and it's just inside ouch quit it politics.
Right. So, they're the people saying, oh, Daryl resigned from the LNC. No, Daryl was not elected to the LNC and just said, I don't want to be appointed to something I was not elected.
But in the long run, you're probably better off anyway. But
yeah.
So are you going to go to New Orleans?
Planning on
18.
It.
You know, I was thinking, we're going to have some, we're going to have some fun.
Yeah.
No, we'll bring on the pirate stuff and kind of, you're still voting. I mean, I'd just be a butthead. You know, Nick doesn't like
it. I generally vote for none of the above. None of the above is my favorite candidate, and none of the above has never dropped a drone bomb or raised a tax.
nobody's going to stop the wars, and nobody's going to, educate my kids probably. Nobody's going to stop taxes, so I'm voting for nobody. Leadership you can trust.
Yeah.
So this has been we've had a lot of fun advocating for freedom, and there's drama inside, and a lot of people that they believe that the power for them to have the kind of change that they want, we're the ones stopping it. If it wasn't for those advocating for pure freedom, everybody would want little freedom, and they'd get a bunch of money or something.
Right. Oh,
they don't understand that a lot of what we're doing, and so like Daryl and Jack's efforts, is what's fueling the philosophical engine of this whole thing.
And because of how bad the Johnson Weld campaign was, a couple months prior to the election.
I don't give a crap what these guys say.
I wound up doing a limited write-in campaign. And I had people say both of the following.